Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. St. Patrick's Day himself. Top of the morning to you, Spike.
Top of the morning to you, my friend, Caden O'Falcha. That's Gaelic for 100,000 welcomes.
Oh, that's so sweet. I know this day is very important to your people, Spike. A lot of people don't know this about you, Spike, but you are actually only 3 feet tall. And so my understanding is that this is your day to shine, where you'll go out in your little green suit and you'll hand out pieces of gold to the children, correct?
Yeah, that's... you know, you get me every day, but that one right there, my friend, that was a little arrow through my little Celtic heart right there. That was an absolute gem.
Yeah. Before we get, actually, you know what? Maybe we should just jump right into it, Spike. Well, maybe actually before we get into it, I am not feeling well, Spike. I feel terrible. I don't know what it is. I am ill today.
Wow. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. I don't know. I went to hot yoga this morning, and I thought that I was going to be fine. And then I got home, and all of a sudden, I just do not feel well at all. I feel like I'm slowly decompensating. Perhaps I caught the Ronavirus that everyone's talking about. Have you heard of this?
Rona?
Yeah.
Is it new?
I believe it is.
You know, you make jest, but I've got a neighbor's right across the street from my house, probably our closest friends in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the whole family tested positive last week.
Wow.
I mean, it's okay. We've got variants and lesser strains, less severe strains, but it's popping around.
It's
a beast that won't die.
I'll say this, man. So when I went out and I got vaccinated, I got vaccinated after talking to my doctor about it. And so I had coronavirus. And by the way, we're going to be talking about the Redmond police chief calling for stronger stalking laws and Nicole Jennings' report on that, because I think it's really important. But before we get to that, I had coronavirus. I had a pretty bad case of coronavirus. And then I went to my doctor when the vaccines came out, and I said, "Do you think I should get vaccinated?" And I had a very extended conversation with him about it. And he said, "Well, you know, you are in the risk category for somebody to get a variant in the future and have it not go well for you." I smoked for many years of my life.
Yeah.
Drug addiction.
Yeah.
I got some cardiac arrhythmia, which is, you know, cocaine induced. So he was saying, if I were you, I would go get vaccinated. But he says, I think you should go get the J&J, is what he says to me.
Okay.
He
the says, one and done. Yeah.
He says, I think that would be better for you and on your system. And I said, okay, because I trust my doctor very much. So I went and I did that. What I find disappointing about that, though, is that I think that if he had known at the time that the drop-off rate of the effectiveness of the vaccine, I'm not sure if he would have recommended it to me.
Mm.
Did you catch in my drift?
I do.
Because at the time they were saying, well, you're going to be 80% protected forever, basically. And now we find out that the drop-off rate on that is, you know, within 6 months, it can be anywhere, depending on the person.
Right,
genetics,
right.
You know, factor into this.
Everybody's body works a little bit differently when it comes to a foreign agent, like a vaccine even.
Right.
A well-intended agent.
So if I have Rona now, again, which I hope that I don't, but if I do have coronavirus right now and it's the onset of it, I'm kind of disappointed because I had to go to the hospital and I had to get in line and they gave me my little ID card and I got vaccinated. Yeah. You know what I mean? The whole nine. Do I get that time back, Spike O'Neill? That 15 minutes of my life?
No, but what you get maybe is another 8 years at the far end of your life. The bad years. You know,
that's very true.
I call them the pudding years.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing, man. Every little bit is another step in the right direction. I know that we were uncertain about a lot of issues regarding the vaccine. We rushed things through as we had to in the face of a global pandemic. It's my belief, and it's just my belief, that safety issues really weren't overlooked. I think trial and error issues were overlooked, because most times when something new is being approved, you wait and see if it works before you start step two for financial considerations most often. You know, they did step one and started step two before they waited for the answer to step one. But then step one went the right way, or they wouldn't have continued working step three. You know what I'm saying? That's how they sped the process up for not having financial considerations, because it's costly to develop new vaccines. They started leapfrogging the time frame of this thing, but they never leapfrogged the safety factors of this thing. And that's often convoluted. But my point being this, whether you've had it and you got some antibodies, or you got a vaccine and you got some antibodies and it diminished its effectiveness, its efficacy, over a shorter period of time than they thought. But everything is a step in the right direction. to keep you as somebody with compromised immunity systems, with a heart condition, with respiratory conditions. I'll take a recovery moment for just a second for my analogy, because every day my sponsor told me every day you get a piece of tinfoil to put between you and the monster in your brain. And it's nothing for that monster to push through the tinfoil. But after a year, you got 365 sheets of tinfoil. You got an inch of steel.
After
10 years, okay, you got a wall of steel. It's the same way with vaccines, with COVID, with infection. You get a little bit more immunity, a little bit more immunity, a little bit more immunity. And your body gets stronger and learns to fight.
Well, I mean, the thing about the vaccines, though, Spike, and this is the thing that I'm not afraid of, but I think other people are afraid to talk about it. There have been people who have been injured by the vaccines.
Absolutely.
The same physician that I went to and spoke to about getting vaccinated, he did not recommend either of the vaccines to several of his clients because it wasn't appropriate for them.
Right.
And so when I met with my doctor about this, he was talking about how this kind of blanket one size fits all when it came to Moderna or Pfizer BioNTech or J&J. He says it wasn't the case. It has to be done at an individual doctor to patient, you know, communication has to be done at that level.
Yeah.
And so now what we see is that there have been somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10 to 20,000 people, potentially more in the United States, who have been injured by the vaccine. And so when I hear people say, you know, it's perfectly safe, I am on the side that for the majority of the population, that might be true, but not for everybody. And that's what I found so irritating about the messaging around vaccination was that, well, everybody should get it and it's perfectly safe and it's totally fine.
Right.
And now we know that that's just not true. And still to this day, you have people who are saying perfectly safe, perfectly fine, perfectly safe, perfectly fine. And that's just not, and I'm not a crazy anti-vaxxer.
No, I know you're not. You're a common sense kind of guy. I can see that every day. You're like,
Right. So when I read about studies that have done on people who have received vaccine or have gotten injuries from the vaccines, they all seem pretty uniform. Myocarditis, pericarditis, people's circulatory issues, so on and so forth. Most of the time it goes away within 4 to 8 weeks, but in some cases it doesn't go away at all.
Ever.
And so I think that that is something that needs to be talked about rather than, Joe Biden or Fauci or whoever it is still touting the same party line where they say, well, it's safe and effective for everybody. It's like, well, not for about, 0.2% of the population.
Right.
Like, let's at least be honest about this, right?
We should never use the word perfectly safe.
Right.
We should say it's safer than being unvaccinated with a virus that we don't know enough about. I mean, and make the choice for your family. You know, if you feel that the 0.002% of people who are going to be adversely affected by the vaccine is a risk you're not willing to take, then by all means, take your shots against a virus that's killed millions globally. We have no idea what the mutations are going to become. That's how they should frame this thing.
I think it's a safer option. I think that would be a fairer way to frame it.
Yeah.
And I just think that whoever was doing the PR behind the vaccines, it has got to be just unwilling to change in any way, shape, or form. It reminds me of when Big Tobacco was in front of Congress in the 80s, and they had these doctors come out, and they were saying, cigarettes don't cause cancer. That's what it reminds me of. Do you know what I mean? This unified front.
Yeah.
So, by the way, speaking of a unified front and something that we can all get behind, the Redmond police chief has called for stronger stalking laws in the wake of that double homicide that happened in Redmond. You know, we've been talking about this on and off all week. It's a very sad story. You have a podcaster and her husband who were basically being stalked by a guy who lived in Texas. This guy was clearly mentally unwell, and he showed up to their home. He broke into their home, and he shot both of them, and then he took his own life. And so what, Spike, if you can tell me, what is the chief of police saying in terms of stronger stalking laws? Because I've heard previously that it's only a piece of paper. It can only do so much, right?
Right. The chief, Chief Lowe, said that the way it is currently written, the law is talking about, the way it is currently written, it doesn't make it as easy as it should be for an investigation to move forward, for a prosecutor to actually file charges against a stalking person.
Okay. All
so
right.
He's trying to get a more definitive law written and passed and into place. And the backstory on this particular tragedy is a lot more convoluted than people first realized. The Cairo News Department, the Cairo Newsroom, shared with me the paperwork on the Where they have a not what's the word? I'm brain missing the word here.
It's okay. You got brain fog from the COVID.
It's from the vaccine, and it's not from my pre-funking last night. Okay, let's be clear. Let's call a fog here. you know, they had a restraining order against guy. Then that's what we're talking about. Yeah. The laws that aren't allowing police to do enough to keep these kind of people from having access to their potential victims. Now, this lady had a blog, and the perp in this case, the murderer in this case, found this family not because of their blog, but found it because of their blog, but then made contact with them through a chat room.
Oh, okay.
And there's details that a relationship was developed potentially. That's what I'm reading from the paperwork on this no contact order.
Okay.
That a relationship may have been entered into between the stalker and this blogger. And that when she tried to say, whoa, you know, cool your jets, that's not going to happen. This guy became relentless and became a full-on stalker and came to Washington. And I hate to use hindsight as a justification for throwing blame or throwing shade. But when this first happened, and I heard the Redmond police say, we didn't know how to contact this guy to give him to serve him these papers, to make him stay away from this couple. I'm thinking, how about putting a car out front of the house?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know where to find this guy. How about if you put a car between this house and his potential victim? Then maybe, you know, when you do find him, you'll be you'll have him cold and you may save a life. And I hate to do that. I hate to use hindsight because there's no way to know this was going to go as badly as it did. That's an unfair thing to assume.
Did I ever tell you about my stalker, Spike, my college stalker?
No.
Okay, so when I was in college, you know me, Spike. I'm a very charismatic guy. I know how to chat people up. I can sit down and have a conversation with anybody.
You've got what the kids call game.
I got the riz, what they call it.
The riz? Days. Oh, that's right, the riz. The charisma. I got to keep up the speed. The riz.
All right, so I go to this party, and it's wintertime in Santa Cruz, California, so it's an indoor party, and I'm sitting in the living room, kind of minding my own business, chatting with some people from the politics department, and this guy walks up, and he is not having a good time. He's having a really hard time. Supposedly, his date that was supposed to be there – he's gay, by the way. His date that was supposed to be there ghosted him, didn't show up. And so I sit down with this kid, and I chat him up for maybe 45 minutes to an hour, trying to make him feel better about himself because he's crying and no one will ever love me and I can't get any dates and so on and so forth. He's got to be maybe 20 years old. At the time, I was 26 or 27 years old. So I'm trying to, you know, do my best to kind of say, hey, man, you know, I think it'll work out for you. No need to cry into your Dixie cup. Right. I think it'll work out in the future. And so this guy takes a real shining to me and he feels really good that I listened to him and basically gave him a free hour of therapy. So comes to find out a couple days later, one of my roommates is friends with the guy, my roommate Kay.
Okay.
And she comes to me and she says, hey, so-and-so really, really likes you. He really wants to ask you out on a date. And I said, Kay, I'm not gay. So I just, this is not going to happen. It's not going to be a thing. You know, you can tell him that I appreciate it. I think that's really sweet, but that's just not going to happen. So Kay says, okay, this guy refused to take that as an answer.
Yeah.
So he started writing me long, long letters about our quote unquote relationship. And then he started dropping off gifts at my apartment where I was living. And then he heard from somebody that I was a fan of the book Atlas Shrugged. And so he went out and he bought a copy of that book and he went through all 500 pages. And every time the name Jack was mentioned in the book and his name was mentioned in the book, he highlighted that page.
In pink?
No, sorry.
Danger sign. Sorry. No, I don't mean to make...
No, it's fine to make fun of
I don't mean to belittle the moment because this is a serious issue.
So, right. And so now it's getting really bad because I walk into my apartment and there is a wrapped copy of Atlas Shrugged with a card for me. And opening it, there are notes in there. That has my name and the guy's name, you know, and he's written in the margins talking about he and I and how the book is emblematic of our relationship. It was bizarre. So I go to campus police and I say, this guy's really ramping it up. I have tried several times to let him know I'm not interested. I have blocked his phone number at this point in time. I've tried so hard to let him know that I'm not interested. Can you guys just talk to him and let him know that I just don't want anything to do with him. And I understand that he's going through something, but I just don't want anything to. So he goes, the campus police, they go to talk to him. He gets pulled into the not the dean's office, but like the administrator's office. And he has what I was told was basically a full psychological breakdown. Oh. And he ended up having to be put into psychological care. Oh. So whatever was the point of the story that I'm telling you, and he never stalked me again, by the way, but the reason I'm telling you this story is that there was something else that was going on in his life that was really tearing him down. And he thought for whatever reason that I was going to be the solution to those problems.
Yeah. That's the mind of a stalker. That's the mind that's you're the only fix available. You're the only solution to all their problems is you. All they need is you.
Right. And that's what he would write to me. Right. And so what I learned from that is that in reporting him, for as bad as I felt in doing it, he was able to go get the care and help that he needed. And I found out many years later from my friend Kay that he went back to college and he graduated after taking some time off and straightening himself out. But and also, you know, drugs were involved with it as well because he was, you know, heavily using amphetamines. But that's besides the point. So my point in all of this is that when you report somebody like this, in many ways, you're actually doing them a favor. Right.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
And it's funny because this happened at a school where they had the ability to reach out to this guy and pull this guy in and suggest counseling because he was a student as you were. And they were, you know, the care of both of you was under their purview when the law doesn't always have that. You know, one of the things about this bill that's being proposed in Redmond, it says if the bill does become law, it would allow any emotional distress a person experiences as a result of being harassed, followed, or electronically tracked, which is the newest thing, would be able to be counted as evidence of a crime.
It
didn't have to be physical violence, physical threats. It could be emotional distress. It's emotion. It says it's emotional. It's not necessarily a physical injury. It's based on the acts of a person, the stalking, the terrorizing, text messages, emails, phone calls, etc. That's a real issue. That is a real thing for a victim. But as the current law is, that is oftentimes not enough for cases to move forward. So that's what these proposed changes could bring about.
I forgot to tell you the best part of the story, Spike, and it's the climax of the story. So at one point in time. My roommates wanted to have a party at my apartment and I said, okay, you crazy kids, but keep it down because daddy's got to wake up early and go to school. Right. So I go into my room, I fall asleep. I find out that the guy had come over to the party and was looking for me. And my friend Kay had to tell him to not go into my room while I was sleeping. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning and he was wasted. And unbeknownst to me, he was literally right outside of my door trying to get into my room to come and see me. Oh. And Kay, who was this, you know, 5'2" little Hispanic lady, had to physically push him out of the apartment to get him to leave. And that is ultimately when I made the decision to go to the police because that's how obsessed with me he was. He was trying to actually get into my bed with me.
That was the promised land in his mind. It really was. I mean, you were everything you wanted, and there you were. All you had to do was feel his. I'm not going to go there. I'm sorry.
Right, but that's what you get. The thing is that what it didn't take away from me, Spike, was I think it's always important to be kind to people.
Yes.
It's always important to be nice to people, even when the possibility of them stalking you for 6 months pops up, and you eventually have to turn them into the police.
I always quote the great Roadhouse, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Yes.
Be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Be nice. I want you to
be nice.
Nice. Some of the greatest speeches of all time. Isaiah Willoughby. Remember that name, Spike? I remember that name.
I do remember that name.
I remember the name. I remember talking about this particular story. He is a gentleman who decided that he was very upset during Chaz Chop. He's so unbelievably upset that he was going to dump gasoline, if I remember correctly, next to the police precinct, and then he was going to light it on fire. He was given 2 years in prison as a result of that. He served just under a year, right? I mean, he didn't serve very much time for it.
It's closer to 6 months, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really short. I mean, I don't know about you, Spike, but I'm pretty hardliner when it comes to things like arson or violence in that way. I think that if you commit a violent crime in that way, you should do the entirety of your sentence. But maybe I'm just crazy. So he was arrested, went to prison for about 6 months. Now he's out. Now he has entered the race for Seattle City Council. He spoke to Jason Rance. I love Jason. Jason is a bulldog of an interviewer. I'm not sure why Isaiah agreed to do an interview with Jason, because Jason takes no prisoners. And so here is Isaiah explaining why he was protesting.
Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Chris, you have that?
I've seen Manny Ellis's untimely death on news, and I happen to live in the same house. He was right next to me in his room. So when that happened, I enjoyed the protest.
Okay, so let's just take that at face value. So you live in the next room next to Manny Ellis. In my humble opinion, Manny Ellis was brutally murdered. That's just my opinion. I'm an opinion host. I'm allowed to have it. And so I am upset about the way that Manny Ellis was treated as well. I don't like the treatment that Manny Ellis received. I did an hour on the Manny Ellis case when I was hosting Cairo Nights. At no point in time did it occur to me to go to a precinct and light it on fire. Do you know what I mean?
I do, but let me just play devil's advocate, because you are upset by it, as you should be. You report on it as you should do. You weren't the next roommate over. You didn't have a personal relationship with this guy. You weren't a member of that community who has seen some systemic excessive violence far too often lead to the death of young Black Americans.
Sure.
So his going off the deep end, piling up debris at a police station and throwing gas on it. Of course, I wouldn't expect you to do that, and I wouldn't expect him to do that. But I have to look at it through a little bit of a different lens.
I understand that lens, Spike, and I can respect it. And yet, at the same time, I think that reasonable and rational people, when they are upset by something, the thing that does not go through their mind is, "I'm going to go burn something down."
I agree completely. I'm just saying, and I'm not trying to rationalize what he did or justify what he did.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he came at it from a little different perspective than someone. And I credit you for talking about the story. We should have absolutely.
Yeah, so he admits that he made a mistake, which I think is very good. Here's what that sounded like.
Police brutality was going through multiple municipalities from Tacoma and Seattle. Then I committed a crime in the heat of the moment, but my crime does not define who I will be in the future or my narrative or the legislative policies I can implement in Seattle for the greater good of my people.
Okay, so that may be true, but one of the things that I might say to Isaiah is that the most, I have an axiom or a kind of an adage that I have in my life that I like to live by, which is the most relevant evidence about an individual's behavior is the most recent evidence.
Mm.
The most relevant evidence is the most recent evidence. And the most recent evidence that I have about this individual. Now, if this had happened 10 years ago and he had since, led a church, right?
Right. No, I hear you.
I would say, you know what? I'm going to give this guy a fair shake. This is literally, 2 years ago? 2.5 years ago? So for him to say, well, this doesn't define who I am, what have you done since then to show everybody that you're not the kind of individual who, when you get upset, you will burn something down?
Well, it's been a year ago since he was released.
Okay.
It hasn't even been that long. You know, I mean, it's been a couple of years since CHOP happened, but he just served his time.
Right.
And I tend to judge people by what they do at their most extreme, passionate moment. And by that standard, you know, not so much what they've done most recently, but when they were their true self, when their base instincts took over.
Right.
That's what I tend to judge people by. And when this gentleman's base instincts took over, he turned to arson to make his point.
And I might also throw this in there. You know, I don't know. I never met Manny Ellis. But if I had to assume, I don't think that Manny Ellis in the event of his death would want people to go around burning stuff. I don't know. I've read a lot about the guy. I've heard his family talk about him. I don't think he was that kind of guy to say, oh yeah, well, when I die, I want you guys to go around and burn stuff. I would say the same thing about, you know, George Floyd or Daniel Schaefer or any of these other individuals who have been killed by the police.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's what they would want. So anyway, then Eliza goes, or what is it? Isaiah goes on to say that he says what he did was minor property crime. Here's
the restitution was $500. It's a property crime. See, Manny Ellis was murdered. The cops were charged for a homicide. So if you focus on the property crime or a homicide.
That is a very bad way to argue, because both of those are crimes.
Yeah.
Both of those are bad. Yeah. Right. So, and then when you say, well, it's just a property crime, who's to say that it was gasoline or it was some kind of incendiary?
It was like trying to light a building on fire.
Right. Right. So I find all this to be, so why are you lying would be my response to the guy. Again, if he wants to come on, I'll talk to the guy. But I feel like this is an unfair way to try to reframe his actions, which were bad and which were, you know, in poor taste and could have potentially killed people.
Yeah.
So, and then to then hide behind Manny Ellis's murder to say, well, you know, mine was just a property crime. Come on. What do you guys want to focus on? It's like, dude, that does not sound to me like an individual who has taken responsibilities for his actions. And therefore, I can't see any no rational person should put you on the Seattle City Council if you're going to be that kind of individual, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm kind of two minds on this.
Okay, all right.
Because you know, he did something in the heat of a moment at his most inflamed, his most no pun intended, his
there's
most passionate.
There's a lot of puns in there.
wasn't trying to go there. I really wasn't.
He was engulfed in the passions.
He was engulfed in rage.
Flame.
Yes, we could do this all week. It's not like he's a career criminal. He's not.
Okay. All right.
It's one incident. And I'm with you. You know, it's been a year since he was released from jail. Get a little bit of a track record of not just talking the talk, but walking the walk.
Yes.
For a while.
Yeah.
And then I'll consider whether to weigh your one time indiscretion, which was severe. It wasn't a property. That's like saying Ukraine's a territorial dispute. That does
right.
not equate. Okay. You know, give me some more time of you living a life of service to your community. You know, but when I say I'm of two minds, I mean, this guy has lived in this community. This guy was, you know, since 91, he went to school there.
Yeah.
He played youth sports there. And there's a bit of a lack of cultural representation for his community on that board. You know, I'd like to see someone like this make a run at local legislation. I think it'd be more inclusive, more representative in local representation if someone like this was on the board. I just don't know if a year out of jail for arson, it's your moment.
Right. And what I would advise the young man, I would say, guy, go volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club. Help out at homeless shelters. Show people that you have made a 180 in the direction of your life. And then, sure, man, the case that you have for being a representative is a very good one. You've lived in that community the entirety of your life.
Yep.
It is literally your home base. I think that you could probably do a lot as the, you know, the city council member for that district. Fine.
But become a force in that community first.
Right. Yeah. Don't rely on the small amount of fame that you got for, you know, attempting to burn down the precinct.
Yeah. Where do I know that name from? Because most people vote. They look at a ballot. No, I know that name. Where do I know that from? Oh, yeah. Arson.
Right. Yeah. Not so good. Not so good, boss. All right. Well, you know what, Spike? We should be political consultants.
Well, they say those who don't know how to do something become consultants. So, yeah, I'm in. I am qualified beyond.
So Spike O'Neill came to me and he said, Jack, do you want to buy a fraction of my house? I said, what? And he says, yeah. he says, you give me.
Here's how we're going to make it work, buddy. Here's how it's going to work. I saw the story about you can now buy a fraction of a house.
This seems like a scheme. I'm going to agree with Chris Martin on this. This seems like a Ponzi scheme to
me. Well, it's funny because when I saw this, I said, hey, we did this.
Right.
You know, when we bought our first home, we didn't have the equity. We didn't have any. We had some credit history, my wife and I. We didn't have a full down payment. My sister-in-law, for example, my wife's younger sister, had saved a ton of money but had zero credit history.
Okay.
So we bought a house with my sister-in-law. We bought it each half. And, you know, my sister-in-law was a seasonal firefighter for the U.S. Forest Service, something she has done now for over 30 years. She's about to retire as the most the highest ranking woman in the U.S. Forest Service.
Wow.
But so she was gone all summer and home all winter and had been couch surfing with friends. It was perfect. We took this old ratty old spider nest basement of this 1907 house on Queen Anne Hill, and we made this basement this beautiful two-bedroom full mother-in-law apartment. And the home built equity. And when it came time for my sister-in-law to begin her life, where she met the guy she was going to marry and start a family, we bought her out. She'd established credit history. She had some money for her own down payment. It was perfect for both sides. And Chris was telling me yesterday he's looking at a situation where he and some others are going to try to buy a house together, right? Partner up.
Yeah, it's like way too expensive for us, but it's two parts of a house, and see if we can get friends who also are looking, see if we can combine and just – but that's just two incomes. This is such a different –
The story that we found, because as I saw the headline, I'm like, oh, I've done that. Chris is trying to do that. And I read the story, and it's something that – it's an opportunity, but it's troubling. because people are being offered opportunities to buy, literally not like go in with someone, but
right.
to invest in a company where you buy, say, 10% of a rental property. You're a 10% owner. And then your equity builds as you buy multiple rental properties. You buy in on numerous rental properties. And then as those properties start to generate revenue, your $2,500 investment after a year is now a $3,800 value. I mean, it just builds equity slowly, and you cash out when you want to cash out. The thing is that home ownership is one of the most dependable, time-honored ways to build wealth. But there's such a barrier, especially now that home prices have gone bananas. No one just starting to build equity or some wealth can afford to buy a home, to flip a home.
I just feel like this is a scam, because it just, so you're buying a fraction of it, and then you don't actually own any of it, but you own a percentage of the profits that you will make when the house eventually sells, correct?
What you do is you buy into the value of a property. Say a property is $500,000, and you buy in for 1% of that at $500, okay, or something. My numbers are going sideways. It's $5,000. Well, so here's, you buy in. Say you invest $2,500 in buying into a house.
Okay.
That money sits there because you still own the house. And as the money generates rental property, your percentage that you own, you get that percentage of the rental income. Of the profit of the rental income, and you slowly build some equity. And then when you do want to buy out, they pay you, if you own 2% of the house, you get 2% of the house's value as it's appreciated when you divest.
I feel like this is something that I have to sit through in order to get free Red Lobster. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
I hear you. But I mean, what they're trying to do is give people who don't have, you know, 10% down to buy a property, a way to get into the real estate market to build equity and to make some income on real estate.
I understand that, Spike, but I feel like this is something that I hear about while I'm staying in a timeshare. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
this
I hear you.
And
buying and corporate buying and flipping properties, or corporations buying and renting out properties, is one of the reasons we had the housing collapse and the prices got driven through the roof back in 08. So there's the potential for real danger to the economy in doing this. So, I mean, the story's on Vox. Everybody wants to go look it up, Vox.com. It's buying a fraction of a house. I mean, obviously, people are doing it and it's working. I'm not saying it's going to be a long-term great idea. It could be a way for a lot of people to lose a lot of money, or for the housing market to be, you know, artificially inflated and cause another problem. It's worth considering the downsides, obviously. But it just kind of, it struck me as a way for people who will never, like my daughter, who feels she will never be able to buy a home. Maybe she can start to build some wealth.
Spike's got shares in this company. I guarantee it.
I do not. Full disclosure, I am not promoting my own company on the air.
All right.
No.